kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
And you spelled good riddance wrong.
Yeah, whatever. I was exhausted and I was like, I was just over it. That was literally like as it happened. I'm just like, I'm over this day. I just fuck everything. Yeah.
I just commented on it.
Yeah, fuck you. It was literally right after all of that shit happened. Go fuck yourself.
So I guess we should start, huh?
Yeah.
So what's up, everyone? This is Joe. This is the SML Podcast, episode 213.
Did you become like Irish all of a sudden?
I'm supporting Conor McGregor in his fight this weekend.
Really? I kind of want Diaz to win.
I really don't care. I want them to keep fighting forever because of how ridiculous they are.
Yeah.
Did you see the recent
with the throwing the bottle and
Jesus Christ, chucking monster cans across the Dana White's like, Conor McGregor, stop it right now, mister.
Yeah, it was really funny. Fucking
Oh god damn it, Conor.
Yeah.
I want Conor to win so that there is definitely a third. So yeah.
Do you think they would not want to do like Conor McGregor, Diaz, fucking 30? I'm sure they're like, yo, this is probably the best press that we've gotten in so long. Like, let's just let them kill each other.
Probably. And
we'll air it live on TV.
I think this is going to sound dumb, but I think that was like super planned out.
I wouldn't be surprised, actually.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised either. Or as Nick Diaz would say, or Nate Diaz would say, I'm not surprised, motherfucker. But just the fact that, like, if you paid attention to them, you could see, like, every now and then, you could see someone, like, starting to crack.
Yeah.
A smile. Like, I think they knew.
I wonder if they, like, I wonder if they like got together and were just like, yo, let's
how
let's
can
be
we
idiots.
Make the most money?
Yo, let's be idiots.
How can we make the most money out of this shit?
It's possible.
So, episode 213. A lot of stuff on the plate today. We're going to have an interview. By the way,
I'm here.
Yeah, Chris is here. No, Ian. Chris is actually here.
I'm here.
Yeah. Have you listened to Ian filling in?
I haven't because my phone died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They have your phone.
Yeah.
Good times.
Mm-hmm.
Good times. Yeah, but you're here. And,
I'm here.
Once again, our show may be a lie.
A lie?
What is the first thing we ever covered on this show?
Oh, my God. I don't remember.
THQ.
Oh, okay.
They're back.
Shut the fuck up.
Nordic Games has officially rebranded to THQ Nordic.
What?
Yep. They have over 20 games in development, and more than a dozen of those games are unannounced.
Oh, that's exciting.
I mean, Nordic picked up a lot of the THQ game rights. And I guess they also picked up the name rights, and now they have rebranded to THQ Nordic. So
that's
THQ
cool.
Is officially back.
That's awesome, dude. That's
our
cool.
Our show is a lie.
Show is a lie.
Everything we've known about this show is a lie. It's gone forever.
Yep. Don't ever go back and listen to any of the previous episodes from here on out because they're just all going to be wrong.
All of them. They're going to be wrong.
That's why you got to just listen to them as they come out and then never go back.
Exactly. Those old shows suck anyway.
Yeah.
So the other huge, huge news this week is that I got a package in the mail this week.
From, what was that?
From
was
our that SML contest winner, Nicole.
Oh, that's cool.
And she sent me a case of Hi-C Ecto Cooler.
You lucky bastard.
I figure I've been drinking all these, you know, Surge on the show, Crystal Pepsi. So it's time to taste some Hi-C Ecto Cooler from fresh from the 90s. And
I'm pretty fucking jealous right now, actually.
Orangey, tangerine-y, it's yummy. That's Hi-C Ecto Cooler.
Orangey, tangerine-y.
See, now you got to come visit.
I might be coming up Monday, actually.
Then we could play some Worms for next week's show, and you could have some Ecto Cooler.
That may just happen.
Nice. But yeah, big, big show today. We're going to have a ton of news to go through, handful of game reviews to cover. Later in the show, we're going to have an interview with the folks from Mighty Rabbit Studios and Limited Run Games. I hope I didn't get those mixed up with games and studios. There's just so many of them. Like, some of them is like this games, this studios, this incorporated, this LLC.
This THQ.
Yes, this THQ. But we're going to talk about Breach and Clear. We're going to talk about Saturday Morning RPG. We're going to talk about all the Limited Run Games, the physical games that they put out, and their hopes to get the program going on Xbox, and hoping that they could change Microsoft's mind on, like, minimum print runs and shit like that. Nah, it's a good chat. It's a good chat.
Cool. Well, you should check it out.
You missed it because you were fucking with your car.
Hey, it's still not done. I'm not happy about it.
That was scheduled for you, and you missed it.
Listen, I'm not happy about it. I'm really not happy about it. I wish that wasn't the case.
Oh, man. So what do you think? Let's kick into some more news, huh?
I'm ready.
I have a whole bunch of stuff to go over.
I'm so ready.
All right. First up, Xbox Backward Compatibility Editions. We got one last week, one this week. Last week was Shank 2.
Okay.
This week, Bomberman Battlefest.
Ooh. I may have to pick that up. Indeed. Do you love me some Bomberman?
Indeed. Despite being $270, Square Enix confirmed that the Final Fantasy XV Ultimate Collector's Edition will not include the $25 season pass because they are cheap sons of bitches.
Wow, that's dirty.
Yeah.
That's, wow,
then again,
man.
Then again, that the Ultimate Collector's Edition was announced before a season pass was ever announced.
But come
it's still
on,
shitty,
I mean, like,
though. Like, just like, fucking include it. Don't be bitches about it.
That's bullshit, man. I'm calling shenanigans.
Stank ass bitches.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
New Metal Gear game was announced.
I saw that. I did not. Well, I heard about it. I didn't actually see it.
And Metal Gear Survive is a multiplayer zombie action game.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
At least it's not Pachinko.
Right. No, because they already did that. Didn't they? Or is that... No,
probably.
They did Silent Hill, right?
I don't know. One of them.
Yeah.
Bungie has confirmed that all of the Taken King exclusive content in Destiny will remain exclusive on PlayStation through next year.
Who gives a shit? That game's terrible.
Like, even PlayStation owners are getting pissed off at this point. Because, like, all that kind of stuff, it'll never be in, like, the weekly special things because they make it the same across all platforms.
Yeah.
Those items will never be for sale in, from, what is it, Xur, the one merchant dude. Like, they're just going to be random drops on PlayStation and hope that you get them. Like, people are just getting sick of this shit. A 2-year exclusive on stuff.
I resort back to my previous statement.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? The game's terrible.
It just confirms that I will not give Bungie another fucking penny.
Yeah. That I'm pretty salty about that game. I'm not gonna lie. I believe the hype.
Hey, I bought the Ghost Edition of that game. Yeah. I have a Dinklebot in my house.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be pissed. I would. I remember, like, that game was actually purchased for me initially, and I felt cheated. Like, I felt bad for the person that bought me the game.
It's just fucking stupid at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad.
It is redonk. Totes redonk.
I agree.
As the kids say.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of more bad news, Capybara Games, they're the guys who made Critter Crunch, Super Time Force, Sword and Sorcery, they have confirmed that their game Below, which was supposed to come out this summer, is delayed indefinitely.
Ooh, bummer.
Yeah, because it's shaping up to look good, but they said it's just not where they want it, so they are going to go dark, and the next time they make a statement, the game will have a firm date. So instead of putting out a release date, they're just going to be like, we're done blowing smoke up your ass. We're just going to work on the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's smart. I'm fine with that. I can respect any, company that's or crew or whatever that they respectfully just go, listen, this is going to take a little bit longer than we anticipated, but we don't want to, like you said, get your hopes up and just say, like, yeah, it's going to be this time. Maybe it's not going to be that time. We're going to push it back a little bit. Maybe it's not going to be that time either.
Maybe it'll be this time. Maybe not.
Yeah. Just, you know, do your shit. Get it ready. And then once you're ready, then
get it right. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just we're in an endless delay cycle.
Yeah.
Like, why? I don't even bother to keep up with release dates on games anymore because they fluctuate so often. I'm not even lying, man. Like, I forgot that Deus Ex is coming out, like, soon.
Next week, on Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot because I just... I was just like, you know what? When people start talking about the game, that's when I'll know that it's coming out.
Hey, that works.
So, I'm actually, like, I'm done, like, pre-ordering shit. Unless it's something that, like, I obviously follow intently, like, if they were to announce a Diablo 4. Then obviously, like, that's shit that I pay attention to. But if it's just something that I'm hearing about that's starting to get hyped and I might have to be interested in, like, a new IP or anything like that, I don't care. Just not even...
I mean, even I'm starting to hold off on some collector's editions just because, like, so many of them are being overproduced.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Not to mention the fact that, like, I think a bunch of games in general are getting overproduced. There's such an oversaturation of games that are being put out that, like, I'm kind of glad that I've been primarily sticking to a lot of indie titles that we cover on the show just because, like,
yeah.
They're reasonably priced, and if you look around and you know which ones to pick up, like, you're not spending hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on games that you just end up getting pissed off about. Like, it's just, I think there's a very high demand for high quality, you know, reasonably priced games because people get burnt on all this overproduced, overhyped fucking really expensive bullshit.
I will say sometimes though it pays off by not getting it. Like we've gone over a number of times how I canceled my Street Fighter V pre-order when the director was like, ew, it's the perfect time to get a PS4. Well, I apparently found the perfect time to get Street Fighter V because I got the collector's edition for $40.
Fuck off, man. That's awesome.
$40. And I saw it at that price. I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
Fuck it. The statue is baller looking.
I'm jealous, dude.
It is an awesome looking statue. I kind of wish I had a steel book, but you know, whatever. For $40, I can't complain too much.
Hey, I mean, I'm only going to be able to get that game on PC, and getting a collector's edition on PC is unheard of.
I don't know. Overwatch had a collector edition for PC.
Yeah, and I almost bought it.
Did you?
I was very close to it, but I got a really good deal on a pre-order that had codes with it, and I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to do that then.
I can confirm that the Overwatch collector edition is pretty awesome.
I believe it.
Because I found that for kind of cheap, too.
Ah, oh, you son of a bitch.
And honestly, the only reason I jumped on it is because apparently the Xbox version is selling out, like, everywhere now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I saw it for cheaper than retail. I'm like, fuck it, I'll trade some stuff in. GameStop has it for $100 instead of, what, $140, $150 it was?
Something like that, I think.
The statue is really nice. The visual book in there is really cool looking. It's heavy. The statue is heavy. It is nice quality.
Yeah, they don't fuck around.
I guess that's one of the good things. Like, a lot of statues coming out now are, like, good quality.
See, I was never really a huge fan of the statues unless it's something that I'm, like, really passionate about. Like, it would take a lot for me to want to go in on a statue of a game. Like, yeah. It would have to be one of my favorite franchises for me to do it.
Oh, I recently, the GameStop at the mall, they had a clearance on a statue for Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2.
Oh, that's actually kind of cool.
The imp in the mech suit.
I still haven't bought 2 yet. I was actually kind of holding out and just, I was going to get it when, it was added into EA Access.
I think it's in there. Or no, end of the month.
Yeah, I'm actually going to wait. I haven't updated my EA Access. I haven't renewed it. So I'm going to wait until that hits, and then I'll renew it.
But yeah, that statue, I think, originally was like $130 or $100 or something, and it was clearanced out to $30.
What?
It was their last one. It was the open box one, and I saw the price. I'm like, we need to do this because it's a cool looking statue.
That's cool.
And it came with DLC for the game as well.
See, that's fucking awesome in and of itself. Like,
and the best part is it had an expiration date for the next day.
Whoa.
So I got it literally last second.
Wow. That's fucking impressive, man.
I like how we went from news to me just bragging about the shit I got.
Hey, that's all right. So I think it's relevant because I feel like a lot of those collector's editions and stuff like that, I would only be legitimately interested in them if they were at a more reasonable price. And that only happens when a bunch of people realize, like, these are kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Like, it depends on the quality of them. There's not a ton of people. It's a very niched market. And again, I mean, I think it depends on how big the IP is. Because obviously they can put out like a Halo figure or something like that and it'll sell out like fucking crazy. But if you're going to do like if you're going to do like a Rogue Legacy collector's edition with a figure, like I would probably buy that. But the amount of people that would be interested in it are far fewer.
Yeah.
I think it's ambitious for a lot of other companies to be attempting to still do them when I feel like it should really be reserved for the ones that you know are going to still have a huge consumer base.
Oh my God. Rogue Legacy had a collector's edition.
Shut the fuck. Oh my God.
Indie Box, how they do like special collector things for like a subscription based. One of their games back in 2014 was Rogue Legacy.
What?
It had, like, cards with it, a soundtrack. Like, what? It didn't have a figure with it.
Oh.
But that's still pretty
neat. That would have been awesome. Oh, wow. Yeah, I just saw it.
That's the weird shit
damn,
that comes out on PC.
Damn, that's fucking cool. That's really awesome. Son of a bitch. Oh. Fuck. I wish I had that.
See, I should subscribe to like IndieBox to get those monthly collector editions just to unbox them. Be like, look at this cool thing that came out, and you'll never get it again. Oh, man.
That's so like, oh, man. You want to talk about niched? Wow. It's out of stock. Oh, man. Yep. I found it. It's just a sold out. No.
Yeah, on the IndieBox.
Damn, that's cool though. That's really awesome. They're gonna make a Stanley Parable one.
Yeah.
What the fuck's gonna be in there? like a keychain with some sound bites on it? Like,
who knows? Do they have any info on it?
I don't know.
What is it? No, they just have like a picture of a box. God damn it.
Subscribe by
box,
today.
24-page manual, the game CD, Steam Key, soundtrack CD, Stanley Parable Adventure Tie.
What? What the fuck?
That's like a limited run games. Great subject because we're interviewing him later in the show. They put out Octodad with a tie.
Oh my god!
See, I'm totally down for people who do these cool collector's editions. Hey, Armello, we're going to be covering the Xbox release of that. They have that on IndieBox.
What? See, maybe you should have this.
Subscriptions. How much is the subscription?
Well, let's see here.
Oh, it's based on monthly rates. From $28.99. So 1 month is $28.99, 3 months is $80.97, and 6 months is $143.94.
I feel like it might, well, I don't know.
It's like $30 a month for an exclusive collector edition.
Yeah. Yeah, and shit, I mean, the games that they have on there, they're not, like, crappy games.
Yeah, and they sell later for $35, so if there's any left. Oh my god, Lovely Planet, Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time, Assault.
Dude, there's a Brutal Legend one.
Is there? Damn.
Is that a
SteamWorld Dig? Forced? Look at all these games that we've covered on this show.
Well, I know, right?
I feel like we're getting special. Moon Hunters? God damn, there's a Moon Hunters one? Shit.
I don't understand. What is in this? All right, included as a free bonus in the PC, right? It doesn't say what's in it. I think it just looks like a steelbook, and that's it. Like
the Brutal Legend one?
Yeah.
Well, it looks like a box, so I don't know what's in there.
Oh, I guess. All right. I'm just looking at it like it's a steelbook.
Moon Hunters has a USB drive with a copy of the game, hidden inside a collectible Sun's Temple statue, soundtrack CD, drink coasters, a 30-piece magnet set, a metal
30
pin.
30 pieces?
Oh, my God. I like the statue. It's kind of like the Diablo 2 skull.
Oh, yeah, that is cool, yeah.
Man, I gotta stop. Look, we're wasting time on the show just talking about fucking collector's editions.
Hey, maybe
that I don't have.
Check out IndieBox.
Yeah, shit. I wonder if I could get an interview with them.
Yeah,
come talk about IndieBox.
Yeah, fuck it. Let's go for it.
Contact us. Press inquiries.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of the games that you're doing.
Who do I contact for interviews or press boxes? Please contact our community manager. Yes, I will do that.
Cool.
I think. Oh my god, there's only 2 hours left to subscribe for next month. Oh my god, I clicked on the community manager thing and it didn't pop up. Oh wait, no, never mind. There it is. All right.
Everything's broken.
Everything is broken. Everything is fucked when you're loading a screen. Where was I?
Where were you?
Another Nintendo fan game has died as Pokemon Uranium, a fan game that was in the works for 9 years, was released and then taken offline.
So, where can you find it?
Anywhere. I'm pretty sure. I think it's clear that Nintendo knows what's going on by allowing it to release before stepping in and having it be removed, knowing it's out there. And, like, the people behind Pokemon Uranium were like, it's more alive than ever because it's been downloaded 1.5 million fucking times.
Wow.
Like, wow. Nintendo had 9 years to step in and stop it, but they only stepped in after it released.
That's so which is Pokemon what?
Uranium.
Uranium? What's the appeal?
I don't fucking know. I don't follow Pokemon that much.
Well, I mean, I figured since you were pulling it up.
I just know that they released.
Oh, it looks really gorgeous. Jeez. Like, just the art style of it? It looks really good.
Yeah, I think that they know what they're doing. I'm pretty sure Nintendo knows.
I just don't understand the logic. Like, I mean, hey, whatever. Like,
because they need to protect their IPs, which they need to do, because if they don't, then they could lose their rights. It'll show that they're not defending their trademarks. So they need to step in and stop it, but they're at least letting it release first so that these people aren't wasting 9 years of their life.
Yeah, I know, right? Fuck. Yeah, I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah. Like, they need to step in, but at least they're like, we'll let you have a day to download it. And then we'll be like, oh, you can't do that. No, no, no. But that's behind so the weird scenes, they're playing it themselves.
Yeah, right. They're like, oh, what did they do to change that, like, we're going to have to do because people are going to expect it and we were too fucking stupid to do it ourselves.
Yeah. And then the last...
It's the whole reason why they made the fan game in the first place.
The last tiny bit of news I have before my big thing, I know you have some stuff to talk about, is Dead Rising 4 is apparently upsetting longtime fans of the franchise by some of the changes coming to Dead Rising 4 this winter.
Oh no.
They are killing the time limit.
Oh.
They are changing it so you no longer need to escort survivors.
What? So what? So you just, like, let them fend for themselves?
You save them and they run off.
That's dumb.
And they are adding regenerating health.
Wasn't regenerating health in there through items anyway, though?
You had to get items, but now it's like a first-person shooter where it's just regenerating.
Ugh.
I personally like all of the changes.
Yeah, but, like, those are the things that made... You know what I, like...
But those were things that made the game... Those were also the things that made people stay away from the game. Like, I love the Dead Rising series. Like, the survivors thing, I can understand wanting it in the game. The health, I can understand wanting it in the game. Although, at the rate that they have health items in the game... It kind of felt pointless anyway. It was just taking up inventory slots. But the time limit was the thing I disliked the most about the game. Especially with Dead Rising 3. Like, I just wanted to explore and do shit and not be under a constant timer.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think I may end up enjoying it more. But I still feel like those were the key elements that made that game what it was. You know what I mean? Like, it was, like, there are other, you know, sandboxy exploring type of games that you can still get that experience from. I felt like that time limit was what made that game so much more interesting, because once you completed it, you're like, if you didn't get the best ending, then you're just like, oh, fuck, man, like, I should probably play through that again. So, it gave you a reason to want to play through the game again. Whereas this is just going to be, let's try and just milk the first gameplay as long as we possibly can.
I'm fine with that. Plus, look at it this way. This opens the door for the $9.99 survival DLC.
They're going to include it in with a fucking season pass, and they're going to consider it regular DLC, and then they're not going to give you an actual DLC, like a content update. It's just going to be like, here's this other game mode that's everybody was asking for it, so here you, we listened, here's the thing.
Maybe. you had some news you wanted to talk about too, didn't you?
Just like one minor thing. So if you follow Counter-Strike at all, one of the changes that Valve decided to implement is that in competitive Counter-Strike, coaches no longer exist. Like, they are banned. So in any type of competitive Counter-Strike format, you are no longer allowed to have a coach. Now, some people, if you don't follow Counter-Strike, would just be like, well, what the fuck is the big deal? It's just, all right, you can't have a coach, whatever. Well, there's a huge competitive scene in Counter-Strike Go, and there's a lot of money involved. There's like, as far as the esports community is concerned. And it's one of the top streamed games on Twitch, like any kind of streaming site, actually. It's huge. It's just a massive, massive game. Now, with these big professional teams, you have a limit of the amount of people that can be, employed by them. And let's not get it twisted. This is actually a job for certain people. So when Valve decides that, hey, we're just going to take this out, it doesn't exist anymore. That actually leaves a lot of people just straight up without jobs. They're just like, all right, hey, by the way, all the money that you were getting from all the competitive tournaments that you were winning and all that kind of stuff, yeah, no, you don't get that anymore. You just got to figure it out yourself. Do I personally agree with the decision? Sure. Mainly because, and this is their reasoning behind doing it, it's like there's a sixth player that they never accounted for when they were designing the game in the first place. So, The whole point was all of the members of the team, those five players, have to communicate between each other to be like, hey, you should go this, like, somebody's got to step up and be able to say, like, hey, this is what's going on, or be able to work off of each other, each other player. That's the way that it's supposed to go. That's the way that it used to be. But it got to the point where basically coaches, all they do is they just screen watch and they just go and they call out the plays for everybody that's playing. So all you have to do as a player is just follow orders. That's it. There was already a person that was delegating all of your tasks to you. So it became a much more reactionary type of skill because you're just like, all right, do this because so-and-so said so. And then you just go. It wasn't, the dynamic is completely different. So me personally, I'm actually for it. But there's a ton of people that are just like, Valve is shitting the bed again with one of their most popular titles, and they don't know how to run a business and blah, 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 blah. And they're just, everybody's mad. I can see both sides of it, but me personally, just because I really love the game and I would love to see a resurgence in the ability of, like, I used to be able to play competitive Counter-Strike and I wasn't in a fucking, like, a huge, sponsored team, but it was still possible because the way that the CAL system used to be is it was just, it pre-ranked you into tournaments with other, like when you had a team of players and you just swapped out players every once in a while, but that was it. You didn't have like an extra person that like studied the game to the nth fucking degree and just said, like, just knew how to go, like, hey, go do this thing, go do that. Like, you know what I mean? I think it comes down to raw skill a little bit more, and I think it comes down to a more organic type of player base as opposed to, like, here's these uber teams that, can't be touched because they've got this whiz kid that can essentially tell everybody what to do. So that's just my personal opinion. But that was one thing that happened in the past week that I wanted to contribute.
Nice. See, you're helping.
I try sometimes. It's hard for me to try and like keep up on a lot of stuff. It's my schedule blows.
I know.
And my yesterday, God damn it. My yesterday sucked. It was horrible.
You know who had a really, really bad week for most, for all things considered?
All things considered, who had that?
Hello week? Games.
What happened?
Well, I think my big news of the week, and a lot of my notes, keep in mind, are from last weekend. Like, not a weekend and a half ago, like 5 days ago weekend.
Okay.
So they're still fairly outdated at this point, but the No Man's Sky shitstorm has intensified like a thousandfold.
Yeah. I would say so.
I'm just going to go down my list here.
go for it.
Bullet pointed list. Reviews are out, and while there's a few high ones, the majority seem to be in the neighborhood of like 7-ish. And even Jim Sterling gave it a 5. Hilariously enough, his site was DDoS'd after the 5 review came out. And he particularly thought it was funny because he doesn't monetize his site at all. And the review was still available on like the Google cache or cache version of the site. So the only thing it did was give his review more attention.
That's funny. That's actually really funny.
Majority of the complaints seem to stem from it being cool that there's 18 quintillion planets, but how much does that matter when they all look the same after 20?
True.
The price is another issue. Most people agree that if it came out like any other indie title at 20, 30 bucks, it'd be a hit, but Sony's actually hurting things by giving it such heavy hype and a $60 price tag.
Yeah, also true. I feel like this is like a $30 game, maybe.
People are actually taking issue with one of the 9 out of 10 reviews from PlayStation Lifestyle, pointing out that they even gave The Order 1886 an 8 out of 10.
Well, duh. I mean, we can all agree that The Order was... Ugh.
Yeah. The PC version released to near universal disdain due to crashing issues, low frame rate problems, control issues. Total Biscuit, the streamer, said that the PC version is worse than the Arkham Knight port, and he stopped streaming it on Twitch, saying the 25,000 viewers weren't worth it.
25,000 viewers weren't worth it. That's when you know you've got a pretty shitty game.
Are you glad you waited?
I am so fucking glad that I waited. Oh my god.
A lot of PC gamers feel that Sony ruined this game by forcing it to be more console centric, and like even a lot of the control decisions in the game on the PC feel like a holdover from the PS4. Like holding a button down to activate something on a mouse.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah. Data miners, though, have been having a field day with the game. They have discovered code that absolutely includes zero mention of multiplayer, so it looks like for now that was bullshit the whole time.
False advertising. That's what I was looking for.
They found folders in the game for like a previous Xbox 360, PS3 versions, an Orbis folder, which was the test name for the PS4. They found folders for the E3 demos, so where they made it out to be that the game was procedurally generated and everything that was happening on stage was just happening, was apparently heavily scripted.
Of course.
Which pissed a lot of people off.
Of course.
The Havok's physics engine license specifically mentions the PS4, the PC, and the Xbox One. So it looks like there is an Xbox version of the game on the way. Although a lot of Xbox owners are like,
you can keep it. Yeah.
Sean Murray actually did an interview, and he was asked about other platforms, and he said that he's not allowed to talk about any other platforms before a Sony rep stepped in and informed them to change the subject.
Wow.
So that seems fairly blatant. They also found a lot of code alluding to VR support.
See, now that would be interesting. I could see that.
Indeed.
I could see that being a fun VR game.
And then the most recent bullet point that I put here is just kind of an all-encompassing bullet point. There's a massive, massive post on the No Man's Sky subreddit that details basically everything that was shown off in trailers, reveals, gameplay demos, and other footage of promises and claims from Hello Games of stuff that just isn't in the game at all. Like, it is ridiculously detailed how in-depth they went with the guy, like, listing videos and timestamps and sources. Like, it's a fucking Wikipedia entry of shit that is not in the game, that is supposed to be in the game.
Looks like they fucked up.
Even some of the most dedicated supporters and defenders of the game, Hello Games, Sean Murray, are admitting that this is bad, comparing it to the reveal of Aliens Colonial Marines to what is actually released.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think the thing that's pissing people off the most is that, like, they're not saying anything.
Of course not.
Wow, no statements, no comments.
They just took the money and ran, man.
They're like, they had no problem talking about the game before it came out, but now that it's out and people have all these issues with it, they're like, we're not gonna talk.
Peace, motherfucker. Dude, like, I'm not surprised by that at all.
Like, they have addressed some of the issues. They've already released a patch which takes care of a lot of the crashing and stuff like that, but they're just not addressing all these issues that people are bringing up of stuff that's supposed to be in the game that just isn't there.
I'm really not surprised. Like, I'm really not surprised.
Like, I have a lot of friends who, like, it seems to be a love it or hate it kind of game, because there's a lot of people out there who are loving it for what it is, but there's also a lot of people out there that hate it for what it's not, that it was supposed to be. Normally, I'm not a fan of hating a game for what it's not, but when you talk about what a game is supposed to be, and it's none of that, you deserve the hate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much an advocate of being responsible of the claims that you make.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with the hate that it's receiving, to be completely honest with you. I think accountability is something that is few and far between in the gaming industry, and it needs to be more of, it needs to be implemented a lot more. So, no. I really hope that, I really hope that something can be done. I know that there was a bunch of people that were trying to refund it from Steam.
I know a lot of people have refunded it already on Steam.
Yeah, like so much so that I'm fairly certain that the numbers are so minuscule that you could pretty much say that it wasn't even released on PC.
I'm not going to just baselessly jump on the hate train. I'm just trying to update everyone on, the news going on with the game.
Yeah.
I have personally put a number of hours into the game. I don't hate it. Mm-hmm. I'm incredibly ambivalent towards it. I was super excited for this game. I did the unboxing. I was excited to dive into it. I put bunch of hours into it, and I'm probably not gonna play it again.
Okay. Because unless they do like a ton of updates, maybe.
I hate the fact that it's a survival game.
See, I like survival games if they're done properly.
I just, it feels so tacked on and unnecessary. Like, I get that it gives you a reason to play, but they never really talked about survival stuff. And even in that Reddit post of all the things that the game was supposed to be, they've made claims that you don't need to resource gather. It was an optional thing. And apparently it's not an optional thing. It's not. You need to resource gather fucking everything all the goddamn time.
Maybe they'll patch it?
I don't know. There's another game that we're going to be talking about in a little bit had issues with people not expecting it to be a survival game, and they've addressed some concerns, but I just, No Man's Sky, it doesn't seem like there's anything else in there besides gathering resources, going to a different planet, gathering resources, going to a different planet, gathering resources, going to a different planet. Like, all these talks of grand cities that you could stumble upon in the game. Like, it's just a building here or there. It just, it's such an underwhelming game for what it was hyped up to be.
I was going to say, so it got overhyped. Like, dude, honestly, man, I think my practicing in my spending habits when it comes to video games anymore, I have not bought a game on release in a long time other than Overwatch, but that's also because I got to play it before it came out. I do not trust video game companies anymore. I really don't. And I hate to say that because I just feel like the majority of major purchases that I've made in the past year, 2 years, I'll even go back as 3 years. Most of the games that I've purchased on release that were hyped up to be like, this is the next fucking greatest thing ever, I was completely disappointed by.
Yeah.
So I am fully, fully advocating just wait until a game comes out anymore. Unless it's something that you absolutely 100% know without a shadow of a doubt, this could be the worst game in fucking history and you'll still play it. Then maybe pre-order it. But aside from that, don't. Just fucking don't. Like, I've heard way too many people get so pissed off and so frustrated because they spent money on something and then it turned out not being what they wanted. Like, just wait for reviews. Wait until you can find somebody else playing it, even just for a little bit. You might get, like, a very minuscule portion of a story ruined for you, but hopefully it's at the beginning. So, I would suggest, like, take your time, do some research, wait until the game's just released, and then, do it.
I'm never gonna jump aboard the never pre-order train because
I can't do it, man. Like, I've been burnt too many times, and I feel stupid. I feel like I get duped when I put money that I don't make a fucking shit ton of money. I'm very lenient with my purchases. Like, I want to make sure that what I'm getting, I'm going to be happy with it.
I think there's a separate side to this where if you're worried about a game, don't open it.
Yeah, but then why buy it? Why buy it when it's released if you're not going to open it?
Because it might be something like No Man's Sky where it has a limited edition that sells out.
See, like, and this is why I normally don't.
Or it might be something that has reviews come out a week before the game. Like, Deus Ex, the reviews are coming out now. Before the game releases. So the fact that I have the collector's edition of that pre-ordered, like, I'm confident in the fact that it's going to be pretty good. The early reviews have been, I think the first one came out was an 8 out of 10, and the only gripe was, like, the story wasn't that great. But the game itself was good, so
I never played, like, any of them, so.
I think for the most part pre-ordering is fairly risk-free unless you do it digital, because you have no safety net with a digital pre-order. So I guess pre-ordering on PC is fucking stupid.
Yeah,
but going to GameStop and throwing $5 down on a game, you can always get your $5 back. If you pre-order a game on Amazon, it doesn't charge until it ships. So there's basically zero risk there until the day before a game comes out.
The day before, yeah.
So I think the people who are like, never pre-order a game, there's middle ground. There is definite clear middle ground because, you know, some pre-orders you get bonus content. It might not be great, but it's a little bonus for doing it.
Sure, but like I said, I would reserve it for ones that, like, no matter how good or bad the release is going to be, that you're going to, you know that you're going to want it anyway.
Yeah. Then again, I'm the collector who enjoys collector's edition, so I have a different viewpoint on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And even today, like today, most games you don't need to pre-order because you could buy everything digital. So,
yeah.
But I think if you're still a fan of physical, there really isn't much of a risk to pre-ordering as long as you can contain yourself, wait to pick it up or wait to open it until you hear reviews. And if it's getting bad feedback, either go back to GameStop, go back to Best Buy, or hit up Amazon and be like, I want to return my unopened game because it's apparently a pile of dog shit, and get your money back. No harm, no foul.
That's a lot of self-control.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
I think it's easier to do that than to just not pre-order stuff and end up missing out on things.
It's, you know, like you said, it's a different viewpoint.
Yeah. Anyway, there's some games we got to review.
Yeah, let's do that.
So the first game that we can talk about this week, since we're talking about survival stuff, is We Happy Few. Developed and published by Compulsion Games, it released July 26th in Xbox Game Preview for $29.99. It has a free trial with it, so you could play an hour of it if you want to get a feel for it. The game is slated to go into full release next year, and the world will expand as the game develops further. This is a game that got a lot of hype based on, you know, trailers and E3 reveals and all this other stuff that a lot of people are kind of comparing No Man's Sky to it, because when We Happy Few came out, it was a lot different than what people expected. A lot of people expected We Happy Few to be, you know, kind of a linear story-based game, but it's more of an open-world survival game.
Really?
Yes. You know, there's quests and stuff to do and story in the game. Clearly, because it's in game preview, there's not a lot of the story there. It's mainly just testing out the game mechanics and getting a feel for the game. But no one saw the survival mechanics coming at all.
Interesting.
Yeah. And this is actually what I was talking about earlier, is that a lot of people, there was a lot of negative feedback to the survival mechanics when it first came out. They have already issued a patch to the game that heavily reduces the rate at which your hunger and your thirst and your sleep gauges go down. So they've already eased up on the survival mechanics, but they're still there. They're definitely not as big of a pain as they were when it first came out. And I actually held off on bringing this onto the show because I knew that it was going to be addressed. The gameplay itself, it kind of feels BioShocky gameplay wise. It's open world, so, you know, you go through the beginning story. That's the gameplay reveal that they showed off at E3 with, like, the pinata.
Yeah.
Do you remember that gameplay where you
beat
the pinata and it turns out to be a fucking dead rat?
Yeah. Yeah, dude, and, like, that was a really fucking awesome trailer. Like, really awesome.
Dude, seeing it, like, in person instead of a stream and being the one to beat that dead rat and see the twit, it was so cool. Like, the aesthetics to the game and the setting of the game are so fucking good.
Yeah, it looks this was one of the games that I was actually really hyped about, because I just thought it was so interesting, like the whole dystopian, like, it's a really interesting landscape. It's not something that you see that often.
Yeah. And, like, the whole, oh my god, Bean is, like, on my shoulder right now. Hi, Bean. Do you want to talk? No, you're just going to jump on the desk. Kittens, everybody. Kittens. the premise of the game is that you're in a world where everybody takes a drug called Joy to keep them happy. So basically, you're over-medicated. And the beginning of the game, the very first decision you make in the game is whether you're going to take your medicine and continue on life the way it is, or if you're going to throw your pills out and kind of, you know, snap back to reality. And I'm not sure if you've seen like the videos online of that you can beat the game in like a minute.
By just taking the pill.
You take the pill and it's like, oh, I go, everything is happy. Everything is good. And the credits roll. Yeah, but if you toss the pills, you kind of snap back to reality and you see the world for what it really is. And that's where the game starts, because they're like, oh my God, he's off his meds. And like, you get chased and beat down, and then the game begins. And again, not much story is in there to begin with, because it's in trial. But it's, I love the setting of the world. I love the open feel of everything, because it's in a town and there, you know, quests to do, RPG elements, looting, fun stuff like that. It's a really cool game. $30, given what's there now, might be tough for some people to swallow, but the potential that the game has, as long as development continues where it's going, I think this is going to be a classic.
Do you think it's worth buying now? Do you think it's something that maybe like it's better to sit on for a little bit, hope that there's a little bit more released to really feel like you're getting the full $30 worth?
If you're into survival games, it's worth picking up. If you're okay, undecided on things, the game doesn't hit full release until next year, so just wait it out. I mean, that's the point of game preview, is to experience it along the way.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't had very good early access experiences, so I just try and, like, I mostly have to normally gauge it on, like, is it worth buying now? Is there enough there now that, like, warranting the price tag is it makes sense, or should I wait maybe a couple months, see if there's a little bit more added to it so I can kind of get my $30 preview in?
I mean, it never hurts to wait. So.
Okay.
If you're interested in the premise, and because again, the game world is just an awesome.
Oh, it looks, yeah, it's very unique, extremely unique. This was, like I said, this was one of the ones that I was actually really hyped about from seeing it from E3, because I was just like, wow, that's different. It's interesting. So,
and the cool thing is with the fact that it's still in game preview is they have like developer cheats in the game right now. That clearly,
oh, really?
They're
so you could.
They'll clearly be removed, but like in case you get stuck, like you can go through walls, you can reset like your hunger and your thirst.
That's actually kind of cool.
There's an invulnerable mode so that you can't get hurt or your gauges won't move. There's an option to just like reset the quest, like remove the quest that you're on. So, like, there's stuff in there that's clearly not going to be in the full game that you can just kind of dick around with. But, yeah, it, $30, I think it's, for our show, it's a try it, but because it's in game preview, it's hard to give it, like, a full review.
Okay.
It's definitely something to keep an eye out on, though.
Okay. I can deal with that.
Next game to talk about is called Emily Wants to Play, developed and published by SKH Apps. It released August 9th on the PS4 for $4.99, and it is coming either later this month or early next month to the Xbox One.
It's a nope game for me.
See, I was going to do this on the last episode, but I realized that I could at least make you watch a trailer.
I mean, I pulled up the trailer. And I obviously, like, I pulled up the Steam one, so it says in the corner, like, popular user-defined tags for this product, and it's like, horror, survival horror, indie, action, and I'm like, alright, so I'm not gonna want to play this.
I'm not hitting the play button on the trailer.
No, I'm watching the trailer. I mean, like, I could see the appeal, like, you know, it kind of almost looks like there's a slight PT-ish vibe to it.
The story is you are a pizza delivery guy, and your final delivery is at a house, and you walk in to boxes littered everywhere, and the door shuts on you, and you hear giggling and weird puppets and dolls and figures, and you need to survive the night.
Yeah.
The game is like an hour in the game is 6 minutes real time, and you have to survive hour to hour. Every hour, there's a different entity that's after you, and each of the dolls or characters has its own unique way to deal with it. Like the one, if it shows up, you cannot move. Like, if you touch the controller at all, you get attacked and game over.
Interesting.
Another one is if you hear the giggle, it's behind you. And you need to turn around and stare at it until it vanishes. And when you turn around and you see that thing behind you, like, the anxiety I felt playing this game was insane.
I could only imagine.
Like, because
I'm not interested.
Because again, the gameplay is just staying alive. You know, right. You can't attack. You can't do anything. You basically just move room to room. You can, you know, there's notes and there's tape recorders around that you can find the story for, which I'm clearly not going to get into. Because, you know, you don't want to ruin the actual story.
Well, yeah,
that's
pretty much what this game is freaking designed about, so.
But, you know, every time that you go, like, two rooms away, the room you were in, the door shuts and the light turns off, and you're like, fuck, I don't want to go back and turn the light back on because it might be there. Like, just yeah. The sense of dread. And, of course, there's clearly jump scares in the game.
Yeah, of course.
I believe the developer, I believe his name is Sean. Let me pull up my email, go through. Hopefully I could find him. Sean Hitchcock. Great last name, by the way. Seems very fitting. Hitchcock.
Yeah, I would say.
Sean, if you're listening to this, you owe me $20 because I threw my controller the one time and I had to get it replaced at Best Buy and use my 2 year extended replacement plan. Like the analog stick was just busted. It was
wow.
Because just the one jump, I threw the controller.
See that, and that's another reason why I don't play those fucking games. Because that's exactly what would happen, and I'd be going through controllers like crazy, and they'd be like, "Wow, wow, Chris, you have a really bad anger problem." Like, no, I don't have an anger problem. I have a shit my pants problem. And I'm not going to play this game.
The funniest part is, you know, we have a handful of people who do reviews for us.
Sure.
Every single one turned it down.
I'm not surprised.
They're like, that's a bit too scary for me. I'm good.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'll put my big boy pants on. And then I peed them. This game, like, it's...
And then I peed them.
This game, it's more of like a sense of dread and impending danger than it is of like super scary. But the jump scares are there. The atmosphere is there. Just the anxiety. Like, I have anxiety issues to begin with. And this game was just
I don't need to play a game for them. Like, that's.
So, yeah, if you're into horror games, for $5, this is a must buy. If you are Chris, you never want to look at this game again in your life.
Yeah, sounds about right. Sounds about right.
So that's either a ringing endorsement or...
Yeah, true. If that's what you're going for, then, you know, bravo. Makes sense.
Yeah, so mission accomplished, I would say, on this one.
Sure.
Next game is called Copy Kitty, developed by Nuclear Strawberry, published by DeGisa. I never know how to say their name, and they're on all the time.
All the time.
Released August 11th on Steam for $9.99. Our friend CJ Greenwood covered this game. Chris, you have this email if you would like to read this one off.
I'm trying to clear my throat. So I sound like I
let smoke. Me clear my throat.
God damn it. All right. You know what? We'll just go for it.
If only you had a can of Ecto Cooler.
If only. If only I didn't have a throat of like a 70-year-old smoker. God damn it. All right. So, Copy Kitty is a 2D old school style platformer. While the graphical style is old school, the difficulty is actually pretty normal. It didn't feel too hard or like it was punishing me, but it also didn't feel like I was just chewing through the stages. I felt like the difficulty was just right. There was not a single moment in which I wanted to turn my monitor into the size of my controller in fury.
By punching the monitor into pieces, I guess.
Okay, sure. That makes sense. Although if you like that, there is always hard mode. There's another.
Can you read today?
There's no comma there. So it's just, although, if you like that, there is always hard mode. the gameplay is pretty interesting. As the name says, you are a copy kitty. What does that mean? Basically, as soon as you kill an enemy, you can pick up their ability/weapon. You can hold up to 3 different weapons, which you can switch between with left trigger on a controller. The really cool thing is that you can press B, which I'm assuming he's talking on an Xbox One controller, which combines all 3 weapons for a much more powerful shot. You have a choice between 2 characters when playing in story mode, Baki, the copy kitty, or Savant, Baki's uncle. I hope I'm saying that right.
Probably. Boki, Baki, whatever.
Something, yeah. Tomato, potato. The two characters are dramatically different. While Baki is a beginner character that is easy to use, Savant is much more complex and difficult to use. Rather than being able to attack any time Savant wants to, he actually has to use a box to shoot through or he can't shoot. It's a little hard to explain because of how weird it is. Just trust me. He is a hard character to use and is only recommended to experts.
I'll trust there are, you.
There are a lot of different enemy types in the game. There are small guys that are basically there just to give you a weapon, as they are virtually harmless.
So kind of like the basic enemies Kirby. In Kirby, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. There are also some more challenging guys like the Sawblade who will power up and then dash into you. They deal a lot of damage on impact and can really ruin a run. There are also weird Tesla tube-looking guys. When you kill them, they release highly damaging orbs that are huge but slow. There are big guys like a chain tank that can destroy you. However, if you kill it, you can become it and then make the rest of the stage a breeze. You also have a mid-area boss who is the same each time but has slightly different ability attached to them as well as different stages. He is large, evil, ball-like enemy that becomes easy when you learn his pattern. And yes, it is the same pattern, it seems, throughout the areas I've played. Man, commas, dude. Fuck. The only real difference with each battle is the damage type and weapon type he gives, as well as different hazards in each stage. Man, this is tough. The boss fights in the game are pretty awesome and manageable. Instead of being rage-filled, they are just fun. Of course, expect a death or two on the boss fights, but it isn't too hard to learn the pattern of the boss fights. There were some boss fights that I was able to actually finish off in my first try as well. Only problem I do have with bosses, though, is that they don't feel different enough. Each boss fight has a different pattern, but they seem to play the same. You are suggested to play aggressively on every boss, and there isn't much in a way of taking cover. Instead, it's just unloading everything you have and getting more ammo by killing minions the boss spawns and then unloading again. Another thing I'm not a fan of was after two failures on a stage, they give you a hint. I feel as though it's unnecessary at all, or at least let me die a few more times. I think the game holds your hand a bit much in the sense that it tells you everything that you need to do as well as how to do it. The soundtrack sounded really well done and was enjoying, but wasn't too much variety. The boss stage music is always the same music, and there are a couple different tracks that play throughout the normal stages. Aside from story mode, there is also endless mode, which consists on randomly generated areas and enemies, as well as a boss round every five waves. There is also a level creator, which was pretty cool. I do hope that they add a way to share the created levels with players easier through a Steam Workshop or something in game. The creator was easy to learn, and I messed with it for a little bit. It's fun, but for now, it's just a way to create stages for yourself. There's also mutators in the game, which you unlock by doing certain achievements. I'm not sure what most of them are, but I'm sure the really fun ones are locked behind a challenging achievement. Who knows? Maybe Big Head Mode?
Yeah.
Overall, for a fair price of $9.99, I'd say try it. I had fun, but after a while, the game gets a little repetitive.
Sounds enjoyable.
And that was the review.
So, yeah, sounds enjoyable.
And, please, commas.
So, CJ, if you're listening, comma that bitch up.
Use some commas. It's tough to read because it was literally just like word, and I'm like, where do I catch a breath?
Word.
Lots of words.
All right. Indeed. Next game to talk about is called Unnamed Fiasco. Developed and published by Unnamed Fiasco Team. It released August 17th for $9.99 on Xbox One. I believe Steam as well. Not sure if it's on PlayStation. This is, another one of those local multiplayer battle arena style games.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have 2 to 4 players. You are all different kind of robots. All with kind of a Hispanic origins, like
I could see that.
Like a granny robot
and stuff.
A baby luchador robot. It just funny robot designs, and it's
a giant bull. Is that the one?
Yeah. Run around and shoot each other, and most points wins. Stuff like that. It's a fairly basic game. There are a handful of different modes. There's like a capture the flag mode where you have to hold the flag as long as possible. Deathmatch, clearly. There is a dog tag mode where when you kill someone, they drop a dog tag, but anyone can pick it up.
Yeah.
Or if you get it yourself.
I actually really like games that have dog tag mode. Like, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah. And if you get your own dog tag, you save yourself. There's a handful of different power-ups through the game, different weapons you could pick up. There are different colored guns and different colored shields. So if someone's shooting you with, like, the blue gun and you have a blue shield, you're good.
That's kind of neat.
Stuff like that. There's also, like, invincibility, jetpacks, mines that you can drop. There is a thing in the game, like Minute Madness, where every so often, for like a minute long, there will be some kind of weird modifier to the game. Like, everyone has a jetpack, or like super low gravity, stuff like that. So there, it's just always finding ways to switch up the gameplay. If you don't have any friends to play with, there is like, I want to say, trying to do the math, like 42 single player challenges. They're okay, but they can be kind of difficult and kind of repetitive. For the most part, if you have friends to play this with, it's worth trying. If you're going to be by yourself, it's not really as much fun to play by yourself. So yeah, if you've got friends to play it with, it's a try it. It's just another local multiplayer battle arena kind of game with a luchador-ish twist.
Cool. Neato. So,
it's fun, but you need friends, like most of these.
Makes sense. So. That's why I normally don't buy a lot of them, because I need friends.
Hey, at least I have a wife and cats to play with.
A wife and cats.
Yeah. If you're an achievement fan, most of the achievements are fairly easy to get, because I know a lot of people ask us achievement-wise. The only fairly difficult one to do would be to complete all the single-player challenges, because some of them, like, the timing could be fairly strict on there, or, like, the survival ones can be fairly difficult, but overall, yeah, it's a fun game. So, enjoyable.
Cool.
Next game is, it's called Inner Kung Fu Game. This is developed and published by Mind Body Aware Games. It released August 4th on the PS4 for $2.99. This is a very weird, wondery view. All of the early press I've seen for it has been more towards the negative side, just because it's not trying to be like a game. It's more.
No,
of,
it looks like a yoga instructor.
Yeah, it pretty much, it's like an inner, like kind of like an at peace kind of thing. The actual gameplay in the game is fairly basic. A different colored orb will pop up at different parts around your body, and you have to hit the corresponding button combination to, you know, do a certain pose that corresponds to that bubble, or if it's to the left or to the right, you have to look at it. If it is part of your inner being, you just do nothing. So it's kind of like Simon-esque with the actual gameplay, if that makes sense.
But wait, so this isn't it? You're using a controller?
Yes.
It
originally started as a mobile game where you would tilt the phone in certain ways.
Okay.
Like I said, it is a very unique game. Let me just read the email that
you sent.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it, and I'm still confused. Yeah. Like,
I contacted the guy because I originally saw a video for it on YouTube called "What the Fuck Is This?"
Okay.
Just WTF is this?
Yeah. All right.
And I said I was intrigued. I asked if copies were available for us to check out on the show. It seems to have a mixed reaction, but the bonus to this is he is incredibly passionate about this game and this project, which to me means a lot. If you have passion for what you're doing and you believe in what you're doing, that's a positive.
So when you say that he believes in it, like, what do you, give me an example. Cause like, does he talk about like, oh man, I think it would be really, really, important if people actually took the time to just sit and meditate. Is that it? Like,
pretty much. Like, he actually has a video. He has a website, innerkungfugame.com. He has a video there explaining the game and explaining like the techniques of the game. He says it's all about the changes of states of consciousness, especially subtle ones that we don't tend to notice. The Chinese call these states the five elements, and they happen at regions around, in, and in front of our bodies, basically in the game. There is a red balloon, which signifies fire and expression, such as talking to someone, a yellow balloon for wind and thought, thinking about what you need to do, a blue balloon for water and running, such as running through your tasks one after the other, green, which is earth and sitting, such as being calm and listening to your surroundings, and then gray, which is metal and observation, taking in the information of others.
So this is basically like it really is like a Simon Says of meditation.
Yes.
Okay.
And in addition to the actual gameplay in the game where you have to hit the proper button combinations, it has like a meditative routine in the game where you basically just follow the instructions given to kind of just meditate and chill and relax.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, the game, first off, visually, this game is not going to ever win an award for visuals.
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely not.
It visually, the game, like, you can tell this is made by one guy, and it just visually, I don't know how to put it. It's very unique. Well,
all right. How much is this game?
$2.99.
Let's just leave it at the graphics are what you would expect to pay for a $2.99 game. How about that?
That works. That works.
Let's just do that.
It was a relaxing game to play. Like, I went in with an open mind, not knowing what to expect, and it was just like a relaxing experience. You were able to just do the standard game mode. You could speed it up or slow it down depending on how intense you want it to be. For trophy hunters, it was an easy completion. So there's the for three bucks, you can't help but try it. It's such, even the, like, the genre on PlayStation is called unique. It's such a hard game to review because it's really not a game. It's just kind of like a meditative experience.
Guide.
So for $3, I can't help but give it a try. It's so unique and different.
It's so weird. It's so weird.
And hey, if nothing else, major props to this dude for putting out something that he is passionate about and he feels strongly about, and he's just looking to help other people by learning about their state of being.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like, I could see it being an important thing to learn, so.
Yeah, if you want to learn more about the game before diving in, hit up innerkungfugame.com. Or if you're interested in checking out the game, shoot us an email. I actually have a handful of extra codes that I can hook you up with, and you can let us know what you think about the game yourself.
Cool.
And if we hear some replies, we'll talk about those in an upcoming show. But yeah, give it a try. It's interesting. It is definitely unique and definitely different. Although I really think this would be something that would benefit if he teamed up with someone to make it work on Kinect.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. That's what I assumed.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it's just iOS, Android, Mac, Windows 10, and PS4. So. Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right, next game is called Monsters and Monocles, developed and published by Retro Dreamer. It released into early access on August 16th for $14.99 on Steam. This game is not 100% done. It is a retro pixel style top down twin stick shooter.
Awesome.
Roguelike, so it's different all the time.
Awesome.
There is not much in the way of story to this. It's mainly just run through the game, shoot things, kill things, collect things, upgrade your stuff, and go as far and as long as you can.
This looks awesome.
The game it's a fucking blast to play. The game shows that there's 6 different locations that you could go to. Right now, there were only 3 different ones for me to play. There was like a town setting, an Egyptian setting, and a mansion setting. I'm not sure if the other 3 are going to come eventually. I don't know if they're working on like a story mode for it, but the way it stands now, it's basically you start the game, you pick a level, you go through it, you fight a boss, which the bosses are fucking awesome in the game. You complete the 3 stages, and then you start a new loop where everything is more difficult and punishing, and you just try to go as far as you can.
Looks cool, man. Looks really cool.
The game is awesome. There's really not much to say about it.
Are you reviewing it on PlayStation or Steam?
Is it on PlayStation?
Apparently.
Fuck, I didn't know about that, because I have it on Steam.
Well, I mean, it's available right now on Steam.
Yeah, it might be coming to PlayStation.
I see it on their website that it says, like, Steam, Windows, Apple, Linux, PlayStation.
It's very possible that the PlayStation version won't release until the game is done because PlayStation doesn't have an early access program.
Yeah, this looks cool though. You only got the one code for it?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh man, this looks neat. I want to try it.
Well, it is available now for $15. It is on sale right now. I'm not sure if it has a date on how long. Through August 23rd for $13.49, so 10% discount.
I'm going to put it on my,
on my wish list.
Yeah. Found it.
It's solo play, local co-op, or online play.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking about it, because you already have the...
It does have up to four player. It says they are aiming to finish the game within 10 months while doing monthly content updates. The full version will have a much wider variety of weapons, enemies, upgradable abilities, objectives, unique random events, unlockable characters, aiming to have six distinct zones, which I mentioned that there are three available right now. And we'll have Steam Workshop support for created characters, weapons, enemies, and environmentas. Plus, of course, you know, achievements, trading cards, all that fun stuff.
Oh, man, Street Fighter V's on sale for $36 on Steam right now.
I got the Collector's Edition for $40. It was worth it for the statue.
I added it onto my wish list, and it's showing me all the other stuff in my wish list, and it's like, ah, man. GTA 5's on sale, too. I actually really want to pick that up on PC, because I heard that you can mod the crap out of it and make it look incredible.
Ooh, Venetica from our friends at Deck 13 is on sale for $5.99.
Ooh, that's not bad.
I have enough for it now. Fuck yeah, I'm getting that. Yeah, Monsters and Monocles, it is a blast. I hope that they add some kind of story mode to the game. Just because, like, the first time I played it, I just did the first level, and then I quit out. I'm like, yeah, I'll dive back into this later. And when I started up again, it was just start from the beginning. So that's, by design, it's basically play, see how far you could get. I would love for there to be, like, more narrative or just a goal to the game instead of just
playing. See, I'm not completely opposed to that, because even with Rogue Legacy, like, there was a little bit of story that was sprinkled in, you know what I mean?
But what you did still carried over from play to play.
Yeah.
Where in Monsters and Monocles, it was like a fresh start every time.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it's something that's going to be added in down the road.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Again, I was playing it before the official early access release, and it's still in early access for a while. For $15, if you have friends to play this with, it's an absolute buy it. So you got to buy this so we can play it together.
Yeah, it's on my
even solo. It's really fun to play. So give a try it if you're solo. Buy it if you have friends to play it with. Cool. It's just a really cool game. I love the visual style to it. The bosses look great. The weapon variety is great and ridiculous. There's like a fucking crumpet thrower.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like the weapons are there's some ridiculous shit in the game. They need to bring this to Xbox if it's coming to consoles.
Yeah.
Retro Dreamer, get the shit on Xbox. You could have it in game preview.
You can do that.
So yeah, final game is Bluk. I think it's Bluk. Bluk. Bluk.
Let's go Bluk. Let's go Bluk.
Developed and published by Pixel Ape Studios. It releases August 18th for $1.99 on iOS. Our friend Jacob Garner, Sweatpants, wrote in for this
Sweatpants.
So, Jacob, you have the email, Chris. So what does Jacob have to say about this?
So it is time for another iOS game review, this one being Bluk by Pixel Ape Studios. Bluk seems like a simple enough of a game, and at first reminded me of the Xbox 360 indie title The Impossible Game. Admittedly, the two titles are nothing alike, as I soon discovered. If anything, you're going to want to put your scorched earth skills to the test with this one. Bluk drops your cube on a column and expects you to keep moving the cube from one or more column to the next. It sounds simple, but you'll quickly discover that it's not, especially when you move on to higher levels. Higher levels mean, of course, greater greater difficulty, such as the surface of the columns causes your cube to slide off the edge unless you've landed on it just perfectly. It's moments like those that make the game unforgivingly difficult and addictive at the same time. As I was playing this game for review, I told Joe that I felt the game was either extremely difficult or maybe I just suck. Turns out it's both. hopping from one cube to the next gets boring quickly, so you'll find yourself flinging the cube in all sorts of directions just to see what happens, and if you were lucky. A few achievements can be unlocked this way, as you're taking a leap of faith, which doesn't always work out for you because the levels change every time that you die. I doubt speed runs are possible with this game, but I'm sure someone will figure it out. The ramped up difficulty also made me quit a few times out of frustration, because nothing is more annoying than having finally passed 30 plus columns. It sounds small, but it's a lot. Only to die and have to restart at the very beginning again. The closest thing to a checkpoint in the game is when you move to another world, which once you've done that, you'll always want to start at the new world because fuck having to go through all those columns again. As you move to different worlds, you also acquire these things called runes, which grant you a certain power while you're playing it. The ones I managed to unlock, I didn't find terribly helpful, but you'll still want them. Bluck is a great game to pick up and put down with relative ease. I can recommend this game for someone who wants a quick game to play on break at work, in between class, or on the bus subway. The learning curve is annoying yet oddly rewarding as you finally beat a world. The lack of a save feature for the game is crappy, but let's face it, it's not like you were going to make it to the next column anyway. It's a definite buy in my book, and I look forward to seeing what else this company puts out in the future.
Yeah, the game is ridiculous. I compare it kind of like Angry Birds style gameplay with precision landing.
That sounds terrifying.
Did you get to see anything on the game or pull up
screenshots? No, I just read the review.
See if you could find screenshots of it or anything, or hell, see if it's on
Luck.
I don't know if it's going to be on Android or not. I didn't look that up because I don't give a fuck about Android. So, haha.
It looks like it's Windows, iOS. I don't know what else is. Let me see here. I'm looking at a video.
But yeah, the gameplay is you tap on the screen and pull back, and it gives you kind of like a little trajectory arc, Angry Birds style, and you have to hop the block from column to column, like he said. And again, a lot of the fun is like when you first start, just pull back and whip it and see how far you can go.
Huh.
The scoring is you gain a point for every column that you jump to. Like,
okay.
If you do a leap of faith and jump two columns, you'll get 2 points. You also get a bonus point if you have a quote unquote perfect landing, which is like centered in the square on the column. There's also little bonus things you could earn, like the leap of faith where you just kind of like hop over a column or two or three. You get a 10-point bonus if you pull that off.
Okay.
I also found that there is a tumble bonus because the one I landed on a platform and rolled off and landed on a different platform below it. And I got a 10-point bonus.
That's awesome.
And of course, there's achievements for all this shit, too.
Of course, I would assume.
Like Jacob said, the game is ridiculously tough. Like, I made it to the second world. Because it's just... Like, I saw the third checkpoint, I saw it, and I fell. And I didn't get it. And I was like, no, I was so close. So close. The game, yeah, $2, fuck yeah, buy this one.
Cool. So, yeah, $2 ain't bad.
Two blucks.
Oh, god damn it. Get it.
Yeah.
So, music for this week?
Last episode, I played some Street Fighter V. And I think I'll play a bit more on this episode as well.
Sure. Sounds good.
Next week should be a pretty good week. We have the new Worms game to talk about.
Yeah! I'm excited.
Obliteracers is finally hitting Xbox next week. A lot of good stuff coming up. A lot of good stuff. And Worms. hopefully, fingers crossed, we could get the guys from MetaNet, N++ is hitting Steam next week, and hopefully we could get them on sometime soon.
I gotta pre-order my Worms so I can get all those extra masks.
Yeah, you better. Bitch, you better! I don't know, I guess that's it for the week. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Not particularly. I just wanted to mention that, Counter-Strike thing.
Yeah. You indeed did that.
I did. I did the thing.
You did the thing. So, Street Fighter V. Stay tuned for our, Jesus Christ, I forgot we still have the interview to do. Our Mighty Rabbit interview is coming up after a brief intermission. And then, that's it. This episode.
Yeah.
So, Chris, final words.
Final words are,
remember when you said
the Overwatch. I know. Go watch the Overwatch. I know. Go watch the Overwatch short for The Last Bastion. It's cool. It's neat.
Remember when you said you were going to, like, plan these out?
Yeah, I know.
Alright, welcome back everyone. My guests at this time are calling in from where? North Carolina you're located at?
Yep. Raleigh, North Carolina.
from all the way in Raleigh, North Carolina, Chris and Doug from Limited Run Games, Mighty Rabbit Studios. Fellas, how you doing?
Doing alright.
Fuck.
Fuck.
Well, you said it was gonna happen, so I can't be too surprised. So you guys just released a new game on Xbox One, PS4, all that fun jazz. 2 weeks ago, was it?
Yeah, that's about right. Two weeks as of today for the Xbox version. Anyway,
Reach and Clear Deadline.
That's it.
So for those who don't know what this game is, give us the rundown. Give us the sales pitch.
So Reach and Clear Deadline is a hybrid action and strategy game that you control a squad of four soldiers in a zombie apocalypse. The thing about Breach and Clear Deadline that stands out is you can switch between controlling the soldier directly, like an action game where you have a top-down view and you know you can shoot the gun yourself, or you can drop into what we call command mode and you can individually give commands to all your soldiers. And then you can let that play out as you go along. So depending on how you want to play, whether you're more of an action mindset or, you know, you feel like using a little bit more strategy, you're able to do both of those things.
Yeah, so far I have been trying to play more action oriented, but there have definitely been spots where I'm like, all right, I need to slow shit down and actually plan things out for a bit. I know it's earlier in the game, that first bar that you go into. The first few times I went in there, I just got wiped out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. To fight in action mode, because you have to actually kind of coordinate your attack.
Oh, you guys are breaking up bad on that.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, you voted for me, Chris.
I think they're still downloading things. Send out the decree. Yeah, I didn't hear what you said then. There, it was cutting up that whole time.
I was saying, I believe that first bar scene is the first encounter, and only we coordinate your attacks with all four of your guys.
I do not know what's going on with Skype right now. Are you guys having issues hearing me at all?
No, not at all.
No. It's just...
Do you want me to try saying it?
Yeah.
Maybe it just doesn't like Chris.
I guess we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll just give it a sec to reload for him. I think what Chris was trying to say, that's the first encounter with human enemies. So yeah, that bar scene is actually pretty tough. It's kind of a good introduction to the human enemies.
I heard all of that. That was fantastic. That time worked wonderfully.
Interesting.
Chris, okay, you cool. are the problem.
I guess I am.
How could you?
Well, I'm going to go see if I can switch out a mic. So
let me I thought
go,
we were friends. I thought we were friends.
Wait, he sounds fine now. I don't understand.
It was seriously just when you were trying to describe that scene. On my end, it did. That's what it sounded like.
You don't have to make fun of my stutter.
My bad.
That's kind of rude.
Oh, man. This is going off the rails early. I'm happy with this. So I know your first Breach and Clear game was only on PlayStation, right?
Well, yeah, we released it on the it's actually on Android and with PC, Mac, and Linux. But the PlayStation Vita is the only console that it actually hit.
All right, I thought it was on the PS4 as well.
Not the original Breach and Clear, no.
This is what happens when you're an Xbox gamer. Like, I own a PlayStation, but I'm an Xbox guy. So I was thrilled when Deadline coming to X.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was like, I'm actually more of an Xbox guy myself, so I was pretty happy about it too. Douglas is more of a PlayStation 4 guy, which I think the majority of us in the Mighty Rabbit side are Xbox guys. At least the art team, anyway, I guess. But yeah. So I know how you're feeling, because before about a month ago, I didn't have a PlayStation 4, so I just figured every game that was on Vita was on PlayStation 4 too.
You guys have knife fights about the consoles?
Yeah, it's pretty much like the West Side Story.
just snapping your fingers.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we get into choreographed scenes and everything. It's pretty intense.
Sounds like a good work environment.
Yeah.
The choreography, it promotes a healthy work environment. Yeah, their teamwork. Like, it's an a cooperation building exercise to choreograph your dance routine before you stab each other.
Yeah. I'm giving a TED talk on it next year, so.
Oh, good lord. So where did Breach and Clear come from? You guys, you mentioned that the first game was on mobile. It was on Vita. Was that the first game that came out from Mighty Rabbit?
No. So the first game that we did was actually called Saturday Morning RPG, and that was released on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita, I think in January. I think that's when it came out. That was our first game. We also made that for mobile, and that came out in 2012. And that also with Steam, PC, Mac, Linux. But after we made that game, it didn't do incredibly financially, like on a financial side. So we were kind of in dire straits. And a friend of ours introduced us to Gun Media, who is a publisher out of Kentucky. Right. And they had a game that they wanted to be made. Like, they didn't really know much as far as like the design that they wanted, but they basically said they wanted XCOM meets Rainbow Six, and you know, with realistic, you know, military tactics and everything like that. So we said, sure, you know, they contracted us to make it for them. It started out as, it was just supposed to be a 4-month little demo that we were going to make, but it quickly turned into, oh, hey, we're making this full game. So I think the dev time for the original release was about 7 or 8 months, I believe. And then originally came out on iOS, Android, and we just updated it. After that, we did a bunch of DLC for it and released it on Steam, and then eventually brought it to Vita.
Did you guys consider bringing the original Breach and Clear to consoles as well, or did you figure that, hey, we have a nice foundation here with Breach and Clear, let's just get fucked up and bring zombies into the mix and create a new game?
Well, with the original Breach and Clear, it's pretty heavy in the mobile route. And we had talked to the publisher, and they want their console debut to be a little bit more high end. So that's why it ended up being with Deadline instead of with Breach and Clear. Because if you look at the original Breach and Clear, it's still got some of its mobile roots. So it's a little bit harder to tell that, you know, it would be something that's made just for console.
Are you mentioned DLC for the original Breach and Clear. Are you guys looking at DLC for Deadline at all?
I don't think so. Not currently. It's with the original Breach and Clear, when we released it, it was very, very sparse. We only had like 3 levels and stuff like that. So that was kind of part of the plan from the get-go. With Deadline, we had more of a campaign that was kind of from beginning to end. So we were, you know, it was more complete on release than the original Breach and Clear was.
My one co-host, who is actually supposed to be on this call right now, but couldn't, he sent in a couple of questions quick. He covered the PS4 version. I know when I first talked with you guys at Mighty Rabbit, I was told that the PS4 was basically the main or the primary console the Deadline was developed for. So he handled that. Right. I've been playing the Xbox One version. So he handled the official review. I've just been picking in my thoughts as we go. He was the one who asked if you have any plans for add-ons or DLC, like more classes or new enemy types or anything.
And not currently. It's a game that we've been working on for about 2 years, and we like to kind of move quickly through our games, and we honestly would kind of just want to move on to the next thing. If there's wild things happening with Deadline when it's on, you know, on the consoles, I'm sure we'd consider it, but we just kind of want to move on to the next thing. It's been a game that we've been on for 2 years, which is longer than we've worked on any game, honestly.
2 years? Damn. Yeah. Where does the time go?
Yeah.
He also asked if you guys have any good tips for dealing with the mercenary, because he's apparently a punk bitch and sucks work too.
Use your abilities that you have, the tactics, any of the items that you get, flashbangs, suppression works on them well, pin enemy works on them well. There's pretty much any, like, just you have to use your abilities. You can't just run and gun with those guys, because you'll get taken down really quick. So you have to disable them some way or another, and get around them, surprise them. You know, pincer attacks are good against them, because they end up freaking out and backing out of cover. So
I was going to say, he was having a worse time with the bar in the beginning than I did. And once I figured out to use the more strategic side of things instead of running and gunning, I moved my guy to the right. I set the other guys behind cover on the left. Shot on the right, drew them out, and my other guys just shit out of them.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to take care of them.
I actually, on one of our older episodes, I explained an issue that I had with the bar, and I believe, I'm going to assume it's been patched, because I know the Xbox version has had, I think, 2 different updates so far. Mm-hmm. The very first time I did that, the bar never populated.
Oh, interesting.
Like, the door was there, but it was just a grass field.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, I know. It was... I was confused, because I went into the door, and then I just got murdered because there were no walls or anything, so the enemies just immediately saw me and destroyed me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess that's not too easy if there's no walls to go around.
I guess that's one of the downfalls. That's a downfall of playing something before release date and before day one patches.
Right.
I thought you guys would get a kick out of it. The building just never populated. Some of my guys just walked through where the walls would be into the field and then immediately died because there were no walls.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I've never seen that one. That's crazy. Like, it's the whole not populating thing happened in other places, and I'm pretty sure most of that's fixed. But in that particular area, I had never seen that. So that's pretty awesome, because that would be a really tough encounter without walls to hide behind.
I was like, are they like this sadistic? Mighty Rabbit.
Well, sometimes yes.
It's good, which is good. So you mentioned Saturday Morning RPG. I actually picked this game up on the PS4 and the Vita, As I mentioned, I'm really not much of a PlayStation guy, so I've never actually played it yet.
It's coming out to Xbox One very soon.
I was going to say, I've been hearing that it's coming to Xbox.
Yeah, it's very soon. I'm not sure. I don't think we have a date yet, but it's going through QA now. I think we're doing a couple more fixes on it, and then we're going to push out the Xbox.
Are you looking like later this month, in September maybe?
I'm thinking it'll probably be September, just the way things are right now.
I'm very, very happy. The more RPGs that come to Xbox,
I hope a lot of people feel that way.
But you said it didn't perform that well on PlayStation?
Well, no, on mobile.
When we first released it in
2012. So when we first released Saturday Morning RPG, it was actually free to play, and you would get the first episode for free, and you know, we prompted people to buy the next episodes. The problem is you could easily spend more than an hour on the first episode, and even more if you were to do the side quests. So with the mobile market, an hour is pretty much, you know, a long time for somebody to spend on a game. So a lot of people are like, oh, I got what I wanted, and, you know, ended up not paying for any of the additional episodes. A lot of people didn't even finish the first episode just because it was just more content than they were used to in a mobile game.
Damn, that sucks to hear. So I'm guessing it did significantly better on PlayStation?
Yes, it did significantly better on PlayStation and on Steam compared to what it did originally on mobile. So
that is very, very good to hear. I've been keeping my eye on that one for so long, and I feel bad because I did buy it. I just haven't played it yet.
That's okay. If you want to wait for the Xbox version, it's completely understandable.
At this point, I pretty much am.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I generally do too.
I just like the PlayStation. I like the Xbox controller so more than play.
You know, I really like the ideas between the PlayStation controller a lot more, but as far as comfort, I'm definitely more of an Xbox guy. But I kind of wish the Xbox had the built-in speaker and the touchpad and the light that the PS4 has. I really think those were some cool ideas that a lot of games actually have done a lot with them, especially multiplayer games.
I can see the point of the touchpad and having an extra button there and kind of like a mouse for mouse control stuff, browsing on. The light, I think, is the dumbest thing.
I don't know, man. Did you ever play Towerfall, or if you play PlayStation 4 with multiple people, you know you get lights assigned to yourself, and I found that to be pretty helpful. What's also interesting is when people are playing it on streams, which I've noticed, like when Douglas streams games, that it'll assign a light to the person that's playing, so it's easier for people who are watching the stream to tell who's playing what character.
I still don't care about the light.
Yeah.
It glares off the TV, and
So that's another thing. I kind of wish people, and I don't know if games are doing this because I just haven't played enough PlayStation games. I kind of wish they would use that for more of an ambient, like, you know how TVs have that backlighting for things that would go with moods? Like, I kind of wish games would use that as like an ambient to light the room, compared to whatever's going on the screen. So, you know, maybe a little bit red and flashing if things are getting more intense or if you're low on health and stuff like that. So
I do enjoy the speaker does have a couple of cool use. What about you, Doug? Let's get you involved in this. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. What's up?
he's swamped with emails right now from Limited Run people, so he's probably a little distracted, so sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine. You mentioned Limited Run. Let's talk about Limited Run games. I love, love, love the idea of Limited Run game.
Oh, okay. That's good. Yeah, I'm glad. I like it too, obviously. What do you want to know? Ask me questions.
For those who aren't familiar with what Limited Run Games is, what is Limited Run Games? What is your goal?
Limited Run Games is a publishing offshoot of Mighty Rabbit Studios. We take previously digital-only games and make them physical. Our goal is to preserve games, basically fight the digital-only age, and help keep games going on a physical format. That way they last throughout history and you can revisit them, whereas digital, you only own the license and that's not guaranteed.
And how many games have you guys had released so far through the run project?
I think it's 17.
Jeez. That is crazy.
Yeah, it's 17.
What is the quickest that you've had a game completely sell out? Because I swear, every time the ICU guys announce a new game is available for limited run games, I go and it is gone.
I'd say probably Soldner sold out in like a minute. It seemed to have sold out instantly. Like, we saw a giant influx in traffic, and I think everybody was going after the same thing, so it kind of sold out way faster than we anticipated because there were so many people trying to buy a small print run.
I know that you're named Limited Run, but are you guys planning on reprinting any of the older titles, or is it basically just a once and done?
So the way that works, and we kind of trying to stay true to our word, is we're not doing reprints ever. So the way our contracts work is basically once we've fulfilled it and like basically sold out of what our run was with the developer, the rights revert back to them, so they can always do a reprint if they choose. It's just our run and our the cover is exclusive to us. So the idea is we don't want to continue to keep doing small runs. I mean, we have to keep them relatively small in order to make sure we sell out and afford the next run. But the idea is that as our fan base grows, we actually start doing bigger print runs. Like, we're not ever going to like purposely just try to do 3,000 units when we have like 30,000 fans or something in the like in the future.
That makes sense. So, like, the very first game that you guys have done, it's never coming back out, right?
Yeah, Breach and Clear was a one-and-done deal. That was 1,500 units. That sold out in 108 minutes.
Easy.
And that was an experiment. We didn't actually – Mighty Rabbit was struggling. We didn't actually know, like, if it was going to work. And Josh, who started the company, basically that was, like, his swan song. He was like, you know, if this doesn't work and it doesn't sell out, I'm going to bulldoze what we don't sell. So the rest of them could be worth money one day.
Take the ET route with it?
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly what he said. He was going to videotape it.
Did you guys reprint it with the Breach and Clear franchise bundle, or were those just left over from initial run?
Those were left over. And we withheld a lot of copies on the first run initially just because we weren't sure. And I mean, it was our game, so we wanted to give it out to our friends and family. So we had we have some stuff left over. And we kind of knew if the business was going to keep going, that this game would still be like the number one game people are looking for. So it was kind of done intentionally, and we're kind of all letting a few out at a time now, just kind of like to keep the hype going.
Are you eBaying them?
Yeah, not eBaying them personally. No,
that's a big no-no.
It's a good idea, but
$1,500 a pop, limited.
Pretty much, right?
Number one of 1,500. Yeah, I personally wish I could have gotten in on so many of these games, but they go oh fucking quick, and I always miss out on them. Congrats that is working out so well for you guys, but at the same time, fuck you for not making more.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a really fine balance. Like, we have some games like Oddworld and Octodad actually took a little while to sell out because they were bigger print runs. Which isn't always good because some people start to think it's not as valuable. So we have to kind of find that, like, that middle ground.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm comfortable with it, like, taking a day to sell out. But if it takes more than a day, it starts to kind of freak me out.
Well, if you guys ever have, like, a big bundle where you're going to sell one of everything, shoot me an email so I could get online and F5 that link until it's ready.
Well, actually, Black Friday, we'll be selling old stock, so that's something to remember.
Oh.
Yeah, we have leftovers from every run. Not many for some, but we're going to sell the majority of what we have left to get it out of the studio on Black Friday.
Damn. Can I bribe you guys to just set one aside for me?
Oh, well, if you stop talking about it on the stream, maybe.
Sounds good. what's coming up next from Limited Run? Like, what games are on the horizon?
Friday is Rainbow Moon on PS4 and Vita, and Shadow Complex on PS4.
I've been seeing Chair tweeting a lot about Shadow Complex. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, right? You see how, like, if you think about how large Epic Games is, it's probably their biggest release.
Do you guys have like a fairly significant number of those available, or is that still?
It's 6,900 available to the public, so it's probably the biggest we've offered.
Oh. But how?
And like, then after that, I'll go ahead.
I was going to say, on average, how big are the runs? You mentioned Breach and Clear was 1,500. This one's 6,900. Like, do you kind of hover around 3,000-4,000?
Yeah, that tends to be where we're comfortable. Epic wanted to do more, and we also thought this is the first time Shadow Complex is getting a physical ever, and it could be the last time too. So we thought we should try to do as much as we can for them. And also, Epic wanted a bunch to give away to their employees, and they have people like all over the world.
Makes sense. Do many people come to you? I know some of the games like have a soundtrack, or in the case of Octodad, has a tie with it. Do many come to you and ask you to like think up some kind of special edition for it? Or are they just happy getting a standard, just physical?
Some of them ask, like a lot of them already have soundtracks available. And they kind of like, so ever since we started doing it with Saturday Morning RPG, they've kind of been like, hey, we have soundtracks. Could you sell these too? And then other people have asked like if we could do like art books or like anything special like that. And, or like maybe a steelbook. So we have stuff coming out in the future that might be really cool. But a lot of people already have the ideas in their head, and they just kind of ask us like logistically, like how can we handle this and how would it work profit-wise?
I saw, are you guys the one who are working with Muteki for Dragon Fantasy?
Yes, that'll be our September release, the first one in September.
Nice. I saw that Dale North's soundtrack was being included for that, so that's pretty exciting.
It is really exciting.
We love the Muteki guys on this show. We've had Adam Rippon on way too many times to count.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really like them. I met them at E3, and they were really cool.
So I know a lot of people have noticed that pretty much all of your physical releases are PlayStation only. I've heard from a number of developers that Microsoft is weird about how many like minimum copies they allow for physical releases of games. Have you guys been in touch with Microsoft at all about making any limited physical versions of?
Yeah, we actually have a contact now at Microsoft. We originally felt like we were hitting like a brick wall, and I think we're kind of hitting a brick wall again. It's kind of just trying to find somebody at Microsoft that believes in it. We're hoping that Shadow Complex kind of like makes them see the light, because it's like, hey, this game was originally exclusive to you, and now we're doing a physical on Sony.
Yeah.
Like, you're missing out on this. So we're hoping like maybe they get the picture now.
I would hope so, because there's so many cool games that are missing out on physical releases on Xbox because of whatever their minimum print number requirements are. I don't know what they are. I know Shovel Knight missed out. The new Dante game is missing out on it. It's kind of a bummer that Microsoft is kind of interfering with arbitrary number.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know it's pretty high. They didn't specify on how high it is, but it's too much for us to call ourselves limited run.
All you need to do is make 75,000 copies.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's limited, right?
It is.
So what is next for both Limited Run and Mighty Rabbit?
Limited Run wise, I mean, we got more games coming out, hoping to expand the print run sizes, and then just stuff like that. Like we're gonna keep trying to do more like crazy new bundles and stuff. And then I know there's a lot of projects going on at Mighty Rabbit that I'm sure Chris would love to talk about.
Yeah. So Chris, what's going on at Mighty Rabbit?
So right now one of the things we're working on is a game called Elephant in the Room, which was a release that we did through Humble Bundle. I guess it was a few months ago. It was originally it was called a Humble Original, which basically Humble contacted us out to make a game for them that was going to be included with their Humble Monthly subscription. It was actually the first one that was going to be the Humble Original. So you can only get it if you're subscribed to Humble Monthly for that month. So it was weird because we released the game and we couldn't sell it to anybody. release this game. If you have it, you got it.
People were bummed that WayForward did, what was the one WayForward?
Oh, cat without salad? Is that what it is?
Cat girl without salad. And people are bummed that they can't get that game because it was a Humble original exclusive.
Right. Yeah. So we were the first Humble original that did that. And but since then, we've talked to them, and I'm sure WayForward probably has done the same thing because it seems like that's kind of what they're doing now. We're going to do a Steam version that's going to be kind of a full version of this game that the people who got it for the Humble Monthly will get a copy of it, but it's going to be a more fleshed out game that anybody can buy. And we're going through the design process right now of knowing what we're going to add and how different it's going to be from the original 2 month project, which was what we released through Humble.
So what is Elephant in the Room? I have not heard about it, so I do not really know much about that.
So it's a physics-based stealth game where you play as an elephant.
I am intrigued.
In the version that's out through Humble, you had one goal. You were in a house, and you had to escape the house without being acknowledged. Now, being acknowledged doesn't mean somebody sees you. It means somebody sees you and goes and talks to you with somebody else. So they have to acknowledge the elephant in the room with somebody else. With the elephant, you can walk around. You can go into trunk mode where you can suck and blow any of the items that are around. And, you know, with, you know, realistic physics, you can, you know, say suck in a book into your trunk and then blow it out and knock out one of the humans if you hit him in the head with the book, which is incredibly fun. You can also, you know, blow the humans in the walls if you get close enough to them, and they get knocked out and ragdoll. It's a lot of fun. Some of the things we're doing now is we're switching it up quite a bit because the original 2 month project kind of played from a behind the back third person view with a swinging camera. But what we're kind of experimenting with now, and it looks like we're probably going to go with it because it plays a lot better, is more of like a Metal Gear Solid, like top down view,
isometric view.
Yeah, and it works a lot better as a stealth game. But you can still switch to first person to get, you know, all the crazy physics fun.
And can you guys make a sound effect that mixes an elephant, like the noise an elephant makes, with the Metal Gear sound?
With the surprise sound.
Yes. Like the, when you get noticed, it's an elephant.
That sounds like a great idea.
Free idea. It's all yours.
Awesome. Thanks. Let me write that down.
What this show is for, giving horrible ideas. God, the game sounds ridiculous.
That's very ridiculous that we're going for.
do you have like a release date window on there? Is that something
not at all. Not even close to like figuring out what the release date's going to be for that one.
Going like planning stages, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. I hate hearing about stuff like this. Like, yeah, the game exists and it's insane, but you can't get it.
Well, you know what? If you can bribe Douglas, maybe you can bribe me into giving you the Humble release.
Yeah, food always works.
A lot of bribing required with you guys.
Hey, we have no morals.
Morals are a bad thing. And I'll send you guys kittens. I have 8 of them here.
Oh, yeah. My daughter will freak out.
I only have 8. They're limited.
No, yeah, those are limited run kittens. Limited runs.
Wow.
Oh, man. So aside from Elephant in the Room, I see Breach and Clear Freedom. What is that about?
So Breach and Clear Freedom is it's kind of a re-release of Breach and Clear. And we're doing it kind of more of an a la carte. Like, you can purchase whatever levels you want to. You get a couple levels to kind of figure out, oh, hey, this is what the game is. But outside of those couple maps, you pretty much get by, you know, whichever ones you want. So we're basically just getting the original Breach and Clear out to, you know, more people to try out, because there's a lot of people out there that won't try a game unless it's free.
Yeah.
And,
which is shitty.
Yeah, it is. What also important about it is it's completely rebalanced with all the feedback and everything we've gotten from the original Breach and Clear. So it's kind of the definitive, like, mobile version of Breach and Clear. And it's balanced, you know, a little bit more for the, it's not really balanced for free to play stuff, because even though you can buy maps, we don't have any like energy system or anything like that. But
that's good to hear. So it's not microtransaction based.
No.
Or content based.
Exactly.
Good. Very good. I hate stuff where it's like, oh, you used up all your energy today. Like us on Facebook to play one more game. You know what? No, I'm not going to like your face. Follow me. Uninstall your game.
A little bit of trivia is the original Breach and Clear, when we first were making it, was going to be that. And
oh, God.
That's what the publisher wanted, because, I mean, it was 2012 when they came to us, and that was just kind of the big thing. And that was one of the reason Saturn RPG was also released for free, because that was the big thing. It's like, everybody's free to play. But as we were making the game, like, we were just making a fun game. Like, that was our only goal. And once the game was kind of there and working, that's when we started trying to get the energy systems and all that other bullshit in. And it just did not make the game feel good. And there was nothing that we could do to make an energy system feel good in a game that we just made to be fun. So after talking with the publisher and everything, we came out and just told people, okay, this game isn't free to play anymore. Is this going to be, you pay for the game and you get what you get.
And how much whining was there at that announcement?
You know, there was more praise than whining, because this was like right at the beginning of 2013 when we announced it, and people were getting burnt out on all the free-to-play gimmicks and energy systems and everything. So there was a lot more praise from, at least from critics, like from game sites and stuff like that, that they were appreciative that we were not doing free-to-play. And I think that was because that was right when the tide was turning, where people were like finding out that, you know, free to play is actually pretty evil in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting balanced now, where there's good free to play games that are still fair to the player. But back then it was when things were going swinging for the evil side.
What are some free to play games that you think are doing it right?
Honestly, like Pokemon Go. I know that's like pretty much what everybody's talking about right now.
Are you guys all addicted to that down there?
A lot of us are.
I would have to disagree. Until they fix the supposed bug where everything is hard to catch, I think that game sucks right now.
They fixed the everything's hard to catch bug. It's just they didn't fix the you can't find them bug.
I still can't catch fucking Weedles with like a CP30 with a great ball. So.
Oh, well, that's because you need to get good.
There's no getting good. You just throw the damn ball.
You got to curveball it, man. You got to get that. You got to get it right in the center, man. It's them skills.
Star Wars Heroes is a good free-to-play game. I've been playing that for like half a year now.
There you go. Nice. I don't really play that many free-to-play games, so I'm a bad person to ask.
I think the best... this isn't really free-to-play. It's kind of... there's a puzzle game called Seven Words, where they have a free daily puzzle, and then the app itself has like 50 free ones. But kind of like Breach and Clear, you can buy more content, like you buy a new puzzle pack for, you know, $2-3 or whatever it is that has another 50 puzzles that you could.
And yeah, I thought about doing something like that with Breach and Clear, where we give like a map per day.
Like a daily mission or something.
Yeah. But that was way too much stuff to implement.
That'd be neat. And you run out of energy when you play that mission. You have to retweet to your friends to get another go.
Gross.
To like the Twitter, you have to retweet hashtags, all the hashtags. So what games are you guys playing? What is popular down in North Carolina right now?
Smash is always our go-to. We haven't been playing a lot of it lately, but the studios generally are big on Smash. Me personally, I just picked up Monster Hunter Generations like yesterday, so I just started playing that. I really had just started getting into it. It seems like there's a lot more, because I played most Monster Hunter games since Freedom, and I'm a pretty big Monster Hunter fan. But this one looks like it pretty much includes everything the old ones did as far as like weapon choices and stuff like that. From what I hear, it's a lot more easier to get into for new people. So.
Did you put any time into a Final Fantasy Explorers?
No, I didn't.
I personally want to. I'm thinking about picking it up.
Monster Hunter or Final Fantasy?
Final Fantasy. I mean, I already liked Monster Hunter, but I really wanted to try out Final Fantasy Explorers, and I'm kind of looking forward to World of Final Fantasy.
Yeah, that one looks really... I still don't really get what World of Final Fantasy is supposed to be, but it looks neat.
Yeah, I don't either. I really just want the collector's edition and then probably never play it.
what is it, like a pop-up book style packaging?
Yeah, that pop-up book, it just got me. That's my childhood.
Are you guys bummed at Final Fantasy 15 getting delayed?
I am extremely bummed. I absolutely 100% hated 13, and I understand why 15 is delayed. It makes sense, but it doesn't help anymore that I've had to wait this long for a good Final Fantasy.
What do you think was the last good Final Fantasy?
Like, true number?
Yeah.
Excluding MMOs?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, the MMOs have their included.
Okay. If I don't include the MMOs, I'd say 10 was my last favorite one. But I'm really liking A Realm Reborn. I've been playing that since it launched.
I was never a fan of 10. I just could not...
Well, a lot of people in the office like 12, and I'm like the minority. I just didn't really like 12.
And I thought 12 was the last really good one.
Thank you.
I'm the minority again.
So you have knife fights between consoles and Final Fantasy.
Yep.
Yeah, every time someone says to me, oh man, the best Final Fantasy game of all time is 10, and if it's not 10, it's 13. Like, I can't be their friend.
Well, see, I can see somebody saying 10. 13 is just like, do you even know what video games are?
I think 13-2 is pretty good.
Yeah, I like 13-2. 13-3 was a piece of crap again, but 2 was okay.
13-2 was their attempt to make an actual RPG in that unit. I think 13-2 was pretty okay. The first one, oh, gee.
See, my favorites are always going to be like 7 and 8. I really like, a lot of people give 8 shit, but I thought 8 was awesome.
I like 8 except for the drawing magic suit.
Oh, see, I got used to it, so I don't know. I'd rather do that than the stupid dress spheres in 10-2.
Oh, God. I'm not even going to talk about 10-2. I try to ignore its existence. I love Triple Triad, though, in Final Fantasy VIII. That was my shit. Triple Triad was the best ever.
Didn't they release, like, a mobile, like, version of that? Am I mistaken, or did I hear something that, like, somebody actually made a, like, Square-released a game?
I know they brought it back for Final Fantasy XIV. It's in the game.
Yeah.
You can go to Gold Saucer and play it in Final Fantasy XIV.
I need to resubscribe to 14.
Yeah, I've had a current subscription for like, I don't know, what is it, 3 years now? And I still haven't like gotten that far, but I get all the rewards, so whatever.
So you have all the minions following you.
I mean, that's another reason I play it. The minions are adorable.
I feel special because I imported the Blu-ray soundtrack that had like the floating Dalamud planet moon behind you. So people would see me walking around with that and be like, where'd you get that? It's like, I had really, really stupid decision-making skills, and I paid $70 for a Blu-ray soundtrack.
When I was in Japan, I bought one of the delivery Moogles because it came with a code.
Oh, that's amazing.
Delivery Moogle minion follow me around.
That is amazing. Did you drop the money for the flying fat chocobo mount? Like seats.
I haven't
people.
Just because in Heavensward I haven't actually unlocked very many. I've only unlocked like one entire area to fly in. And I haven't gotten that far in the expansion, which is another reason why now that 15 is delayed, I might go back and actually try. I just my problem was always dungeons took too long, and I would always have to tell my wife like two more minutes whenever we had to go somewhere, and then it was like another hour. So like I haven't bought the Chocobo mainly because like I don't have enough places to use it. It's kind of the same with like Odin's horse. Like, it's expensive. It's like $10, I think. And, like, I couldn't justify that right away either.
And the Chocobo, isn't that like $30 or something ridiculous?
It's $20, which is still a shit ton of money for a mount.
Yeah. But it's special.
I mean, I upgraded it to the special edition to get the fat Chocobo mount, like the normal one.
Yeah. I have the collector edition of the original PC version of the game. And then I got the PS3 of A Realm Reborn. I got the PS4 of A Realm Reborn. Then the PS4 of Heavensward. And I haven't played the game in like a year and a half, except for they had a free weekend like 2 or 3 weeks ago that I fired it up. I'm like, I don't remember any of this shit.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
well, that's good for you, though. You could pick up another class then.
I'm honestly considering swapping server, like finding a new server that I have friends playing in, starting fresh, because even when I did play it, I mostly did the single player stuff.
That's what I did. There's a couple guys on Twitter that are trying to get me to join their server because all my friends left my server. Like, they're just not playing anymore. Or they're like even my free company is just me now, and it's like no point in having it. I don't even have a house, so it's like, why am I in this company?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about jumping servers. So if you ever do, let me know.
Sounds good. So we'll have to make our own all new server, a whole new world.
Yeah.
New fantastic point of view.
There you go.
I wanted to tell us nowhere where to go.
I think I named my free company was like named like Yakuza or something because I was like trying to get Sega fans to join.
Nice.
And then I kept getting people saying, like, this is offensive. And I'm like, really? It's whatever.
I forced my friends because I pretty much fronted up all the money to create it. So I was like, it needs to have the initials SML for my dumb fucking show. And we called it Someone Might Level.
Wow. Yeah, I should make a limited run for your company. I bet you'll join.
That works.
There you go. But only like 8 people can join it, and then you're out of spots.
Yeah, it's limited space.
It's sold out. That would be amazing. Oh my lord! So what's coming out this fall that you guys are interested?
Deus Ex is next week.
My god, that looked.
Yeah, I was actually trying to play the last one again to remember what happened, but like, I don't feel like buying it again. Because, like, I switched to Sony, like Chris was saying, and I was hoping PlayStation Now had it, because I just used my free trial, and it's not on there, so I'm kind of disappointed. So now I'm on the fence of, like, should I buy it and play it for 5 days? And, like, tell myself I'm actually going to beat it again, or, like, in reality, I'm just going to get ADD and not beat it? Just so I can get caught up again? But, like, whatever. I'll just read Wikipedia.
Does it carry on the story? I thought it was, like, a whole new, fresh story.
No, it's supposed to be a sequel. Because you're the same guy from the last one.
Yeah. I have
I'm sure it's a new story, though.
I have the game on my Xbox One for the backward compatibility, so maybe I'll fire it up and get a refresher.
Oh, it does that? Shit, I might just do that then.
Yeah, do you have an Xbox One?
Yeah, I mean, I have all of them. I was trying to just play. If I played it again, I wanted to get trophies instead of achievements, but...
Yeah, both versions of the game are compatible on the Xbox One, regular and the direct.
Well, crap, I might just do that then again.
Aqua compatibility, sucka. Have to pay another fee. Rent a game you want.
Pretty much.
What about you, Chris? What are you looking forward to?
Probably Dead Rising. I'm pretty sure that's coming out this year.
I think December Dead Rising 4. Sometime?
Yeah.
Number 6, I think.
So, I can't really think of anything else before then.
Did you see the Gamescom trailer of Dead Rising 4?
No, not yet.
Oh my god, it looks ridiculous. Some of the new weapons and the exos. It looks batshit.
Batshit crazy is what I love about that series. Yeah, that and Titanfall 2, I think that's another one I'm kind of before.
Either of you Gears fans?
Anyway. Yeah. The first three Gears of War, I've sat down and co-opted with a friend every time it comes out. Like, we both take a day off work and just, like, camp out and play through the game.
Nice.
We didn't do it with Judgment. I still haven't played Judgment, but we might end up doing it for Gears of War 4. I don't know yet. I gotta talk to him.
If you need someone to do it with, let me know, because I am definitely picking that one up.
I'm always looking for somebody to do it with.
What's up? You're only a couple of states away.
All right.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania makes me uncomfortable now.
It should. This place sucks. Oh, man. Yeah, plus if
yeah, you guys have too many games expo there.
Too many what?
Don't you have too many games expo? Is that in Pennsylvania?
I think so. I've never been to that one. The only thing I ever go to every year is MAGFest.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, MAGFest is awesome.
You guys go to MAGFest?
We've been. Actually, that's the place we debuted Saturday Morning RPG before we released it.
What year was that?
That was in 2012.
That at the Gaylord, or was that at the Hilton?
That was at the Gaylord. We went there. It was the first year that was at Gaylord, I think. So it might have been 2011.
Huh.
But, yeah. We went there 2 years in a row, and I have not been back since, and I'm very sad because I always have some reason I can't make it.
Well, registration is open now for next January's event. You guys should make.
Yeah. I'd like to have an official presence there somehow or another, but we'll have to discuss that here.
you can have a table there and show off Elephant in the
room. Yeah, it'd be a good fit for that.
Have their indie showcase going on at MAGFest, like an official indie, a giant indie set.
Yeah. We were there for the first one.
Even from when they first went to the Gaylord to what it is compared to last year, it is just getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I always see pictures from my friends, and I'm jealous every time.
I'm shocked at how big it's gotten, because I was there at MAGFest 1 when there were 200 people.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and now it's at like thousands upon thousands of people. The indie section is bigger than MAGFest 1.
Oh, yeah, I bet it is.
It is just insane how crazy it's gotten. But if you guys make it to MAGFest, this should try getting a spot in the indie room and share a beer or something while we're there.
Yeah, I think we'll probably try, because we'll have games that'll be a good fit for it by then, I'm sure. So Saturday Morning RPG was picked for it. Like, the first year we went, we actually paid for a booth to promote Saturday Morning RPG. And the second year, we were actually picked for the Indie Showcase. So,
nice.
Yeah.
You could have a limited run store there.
That'd be awesome.
You'd sell off whatever doesn't sell during Black Friday.
Yeah, we're actually thinking about doing that at future conventions, like trying to have like an actual like table or area. So we might actually be in Portland and have a table for Purge.
What's Purge?
It's the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. It's supposed to be like one of the bigger like non-PAX conventions.
Sounds interesting.
It's so big, you've never heard of it.
It's massive, apparently.
It's definitely big within like the retro collectors section. Like, always see, like, every year they have that, there's always some pictures going around of some old thing that somebody dug up, like old prototype machine or something.
I'm sure. I'm guessing they're gonna have like the Nintendo PlayStation there this year. I think that's making the rounds.
I think that was there last year. I think that's kind of where it started getting big recognition.
Or the American 64D
yeah.
disk drive that was unearthed, the actual American one. Crazy that how shit like that just surfaced.
Didn't he find it like a yard sale or something?
Probably.
In Seattle.
Like the person who found the prototype for California raisins at a fucking flea market or yard sale or something. Can't I find that? I just find 12 copies of Mario Brothers Duck Hunt. And people find, like, oh, I found a boxed Earthbound for 70 cents. Hell.
Yeah, I get that feeling a lot, too.
Oh, and like, man.
I just never go to yard sales, so I guess I can't be too mad.
It's hot for that. The apocalypse is coming. It's too hot. But I know we've been chatting for nearly an hour now. I'm not sure if there's anything else that you guys want to talk about or any other subjects you want to cover.
No, I mean, I'm pretty good. It was a lot of fun to be on here, so.
Feel bad taking up all your email time.
You're good. It's not as bad as it was.
I had to go and ask you questions and distract you.
Yeah. If it wasn't you, it'd be porn.
Hey, what happened?
Will you let stop you? I'm still watching porn.
Shouldn't have our show stop you from watching. We've had a lot worse happen during this show. Well,
fellas, is that a challenge? Because
hey, find something fun and schedule us for a future visit, and we'll make something happen. But it's been a pleasure talking with the both of you. You are welcome back to come on anytime. Maybe when Saturday morning RPG ready to hit the Xbox, we could something get you back on.
Awesome, sounds good.
Do you guys have any final words for our listeners?
When is this show going to be on the internet?
Probably Friday.
Okay, pick up Shadow Complex and Rainbow Moon if you have. So there you go.
Buy all our games on every
LimitedRunGames.com.
Buy what's left of your games.
At the Mighty Rabbit. At Mighty Cooper.
At LimitedRun Games.
At LimitedRun Games.
Follow our leaders.
You're just talking over each other with your links.
Fuck. Stop.